think. We're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
Yes, that's right. We're on a Friday Rave here back in the studio on Smith Street in beautiful downtown Fitzroy or Collingwood? I think it's Fitzroy this side of the street, but it's Collingwood in my heart.
Yeah, but, that's right.
Yeah, sorry for, well, not sorry, but we couldn't make it into the studio last week, so we played you something which you thought was, what's the word, relevant to what's happening at the moment, the stuff about the Great Gaza Plan that the Board of Peace is now being going forward with. But here we are. And before we start, I want to point out that starting, I think, when does subscriber drive start? This month?
And it starts on Monday.
Monday.
9th to the 15th, the station needs 1,000 new subscribers or resubscribers.
Yes.
So now's your time, folks, to keep its 50th year this year of 3CR. And from its inception, subscribers were how the station got off the ground and how it keeps going. So you can subscribe. You don't have to subscribe to a Friday Rave, but it'd be nice.
It'd be nice to you have the option of nominating the show you listen to. So
why not this one?
Why not this one? Give us a bit more latitude to do what we do.
Yeah, and you'll be able to hear through the airwaves how to do that on 8:55 AM. But here it is at 3cr.org.au. You can subscribe. You can call the station on 94198377, or of course, come in and pop into the studios.
Yeah, stick your head in the door, say hello.
Yeah, it's really nice being here and seeing everyone pop in to re-up their subscriptions.
Yeah.
Even just today. So make
I re-up my subscription.
Oh, lucky.
I was making a mental note to mention the subscriber drive and I thought, shit, Jacob, is your subscription up to date? And you know what? It wasn't.
Oh, so here's your message to jump on and check.
Yeah.
And it's only $40 unwaged.
Yep.
Or concession, and $80 full if you're an organisation. It's $150, or you can do a solidarity for $300 if you're a bit more flush than the rest of us.
You could do a solidarity for $3,000 if you really want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, why not? But today we got to mention, I mean, people are aware that last week, January the 26th, was Invasion Day, and your Friday Rave crew were there with our Renegade Solidarity sound hat on, doing the sound to amplify the voices of the voiceless again, as we always do. And people be aware that initially a bomb thrown into the middle of a Invasion Day rally in Perth wasn't terrorism, but I think they've come around to having to say that it was now. So thank goodness for that. But anyway, the 26th of January is a divisive date. And while we were on the streets with solidarity with the First Nations people, others chose to mark the day in different ways. And I'm not talking about the street level fash or the One Nation ears taking any opportunity, as they do, to spread their filthy bile and hatred. But I am talking about Australia's greatest friend and ally, our mate, the United States of America. Choosing Australia Day, and look, maybe they weren't even aware it was Australia Day, but they chose Australia Day, the 26th of January, to release a report that basically attempts to redefine the US government's position on AUKUS.
Mm-hmm. The long-awaited one or a different one?
Oh, awaited one, yeah. Yeah. The US Congressional Research Service report titled Navy Virginia Class Submarine Program and AUKUS Submarine Pillar 1 Project, Backgrounds and Issues for Congress, on the face of it, examines, and that's 116 pages, so that's a few hours waiting time for me in the Austin Hospital Outpatients Department.
Well, I was going to say that the title's long enough without the extra 115 pages.
Well, I think a good 35, 40 of those pages are footnotes.
Uh-huh.
It essentially argued against selling submarines to Australia. I mean, it gave arguments both ways, but you can see where it was going and what it was advocating. It was arguing against selling submarines and advocating for what it calls a quote-unquote military division of labour approach. And what does this mean? What's a division? Well, I want to read you, I don't often do this, paraphrase it generally, but I want to read it directly from the report. And I've got the report open in front of me. It will be in a second. And look, you can get it yourself at congress.gov and then follow, just type in AUKUS in their search engine, you'll get it. The URL is too complicated. But I'll quote, "An alternative to Pillar 1, as currently structured, would be US-Australia Military Division of Labour, under which US SNNs, that's nuclear submarines, would perform both US and Australian SSN missions, while Australia invested in military capabilities for performing non-NSS missions for both Australia and the US. Such a US-Australia military division of labour might be broadly similar to military divisions of labour that existed between the US and some or all of its NATO or other allies, including Australia itself, for naval capabilities such as aircraft carriers, SSNs, large surface combatants and amphibious ships, and for non-naval capabilities such as, to name only some examples, nuclear weapons, space assets and ISR capabilities." Mm-hmm. And ISR, for you people who don't follow this stuff every day, is intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance. "Under a US-Australia military division of labour for performing SNN missions and non-SN missions, the forward rotations of US and UK SSNs to Australia planned under Pillar 1 SRF West, that's the Submarine Rotational Force in Garden Island, would still be implemented. Up to 8 additional Virginia-class SSNs would be built, and instead of 3 to 5 of them being sold to Australia, these additional boats would instead be retained in US Navy service and operated out of Australia, along with the 5 US and UK SSNs that are already planned to operate out of Australia under Pillar 1 as a Submarine Rotation Force West." So they're saying there, I'm stop quoting for a second, they're saying there that they're just going to say, okay, well, we've built all the infrastructure now for the submarines, so there's no need for Australia to own them. We can own them. Mm. And Australia's role in the Division of Labour would be maintaining SRF West and doing some of the non-nuclear submarine work.
Yeah, well, and also, as we mentioned in the show a little while ago, making sure that the submarines that are visiting within near Garden Island are kept safe through the AUKUS program through the AFP.
Exactly. And, you know, looking at nuclear waste, nuclear weapons, all that kind of stuff.
Which I think you've done a show on looking at the legislation around that.
The Naval Nuclear Regulator.
Mm.
Yeah. Scariest piece of legislation, I've got to say.
And I guess just on this, if, you know, I mean, you've said from the get-go, the submarines aren't...
Never going to get the submarines.
Never going to get the submarines. But I guess if you look at Australia's capabilities in terms of autonomous systems, and it's been spoken about in the instance of a war with China.
Yep.
And the Taiwan Strait,
yep.
That submarines are necessary for that part, but also autonomous systems and undersea drones are going to be really necessary as well. And I guess thinking about Australia's role in providing the loyal wingman, or the loyal, I don't know, what would you
the
call
ghost
it?
Shark.
The ghost shark, which Anduril has had a $1.7 billion contract to build an unspecified number of ghost sharks.
Yep.
But the Department of War use the same AI system that Anduril has developed called Lattice, which the ghost sharks are embedded with. So they're going to be, you know, become interoperable.
Yeah. Yeah. They're interoperable. And, you know, the big US, Australian, Western world, what do they call them? Unmanned
UAVs.
Naval vehicles. But naval in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Exercise happened last year in Australia.
Yes.
Or on autonomous naval systems.
Mm. And that was what the one where the underwater vehicle, whatever it's called, I can't remember the acronym. There's too many three-letter acronyms.
Yeah.
did the first operation out of Australia, but was located in the UK.
In the UK, yeah. It's almost bloody like quantum entanglement, isn't it? We're quantumly entangled with the US and the UK. But anyway, it goes on to say, Australia, instead of using funds to purchase, build, operate and pay in the chain SSNs, would instead invest those funds in other military capabilities.
Oh.
So they're not only saying we shouldn't buy their subs, they're telling us how to spend our money, such as, for example, long-range anti-ship missiles, drones, loitering munitions, B-21 long-range bombers, other long-range strike craft, systems for defending against attack by ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, manned aircraft or drones, so as to create the Australian capacity for performing other missions, including non-SSN military missions for both Australia and the United States.
So they've essentially given a shopping list of things that they don't want to make that they want Australia to make instead.
Yeah, and they're saying, you've said you've got $400 billion to spend on this shit, and we're not going to sell it to you, so here's what you should do instead. The chutzpah of these people. You know, under one variation, the proposed sharing of US naval nuclear propulsion technology and US submarines technology, the proposed Australian investments in Australian and US submarine construction capability, and the other proposed actions for supporting eventual Australian construction of AUKUS SNZs would continue. So we can keep paying for it all. We just won't get any submarines. And Australia would eventually build its own nuclear submarines. Now, can you really believe that's happening?
No.
No. Under another variation, it goes on. The various, you know, we continue to investigate other military capabilities, and then we, instead of building our own submarines, we can help the US build their submarines that they'd operate out of Australia under US flags. Now, that's all, this is where we're up to. And as you said, we've said from the get-go that we weren't going to get US nuclear subs. And one may assume that Australia's defence minister would have something to say about this, and he did. He said it was just talk. He said, and I quote, "You're going to hear a whole lot of commentary at the end of the day from the US Congress," he said. "We've heard the US president make clear the position of the United States in respect of this question, and he has said we are full steam ahead in respect of this, and includes the transfer of the Virginias." Now, his gormlessness in dismissing this report as nothing more than commentary, you know, in deference to the cast-iron assurance he feels from President Trump, has unwittingly, and really it's not any more less unwitting than any of the fool's other utterances, we've said this before at a Friday rave, we can't actually believe that this idiot, this absolute fucking argument against private school education, is still Deputy Prime Minister and Defence Minister. And I'll tell you what, that is a sentiment, you can laugh, but that is a sentiment that more and more and more is being used by even right-wing defence commentators around Australia.
Yeah, right.
It's not just us. You know, they're saying, this guy's a total wanker.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, he was seen running through Geelong the other day with his black army T-shirt on.
Yeah,
Bodyguards running. Oh, mate, is a... Anyway, I get frustrated. Leave him alone. As I was saying, this gormless twat has revealed not just his contempt for due process of US law, but his disdain for similar reports from the Australian parliamentary process of seeking advice from experts. This tool, you know, charged by Australia's democratic institutions with directing the defence of Australia and Australia's national interest, has come out and said that not only against all advice to the contrary, he thinks that some yet-to-be-determined US president will sell us submarines at some yet-to-be-determined price or date, but that he takes the word of Donald Trump as money in the bank. Well, you know, maybe it's money in his bank.
Maybe it is.
Anyway. Well, I obviously don't hold the democratic institutions of the US or Australia in very high regard. I do agree with the overall assessment of the congressional report that the future sale of nuclear subs to Australia from a US perspective is a stupid idea. We're never going to get them. We're never going to get them. We've been saying, as we said, since AUKUS first went public. Anyway.
And we've also been saying it's not about the submarines.
It's not about the submarines.
It's never been about the subs.
But here in Australia, it was important for the military commentariat, along with the political class, to swamp the media space with positive spin in order to get through the rest of the AUKUS program.
Mm.
All right, because otherwise they wouldn't have been able to get it through without dangling the carrot of, oh, you could have nuclear submarines, you can be important too.
Mm.
And, you know, the rest of the AUKUS program is just shit that really matters. You know, it was necessary to get that infrastructure in place so that we can operate in what's now being described as a military division of labour arrangement, nuclear waste sites, adequate sub-bases for force rotations, more Marines in the top end, satellite launches, intelligence integration, interoperability, you name it. All of which will be made available to any future US warfighting effort, because the crux of the report is this. Anything we sell to Australia may not necessarily be made available to a future war with China.
Mm.
That's what. Yeah. That's it. But it's not only the US that we need to concern ourselves with. There's now the scary prospect of the Board of Peace. And I just want to point out, no, Mercedes, you've got something to say about that. But Donald Trump writing to the Norwegian Prime Minister or Parliament a couple of weeks ago, so whinging that because he never got the Nobel Peace Prize, he no longer was interested in peace. So it makes me wonder how in his own notebook he's spelling Board of Peace.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so most listeners would be aware that Trump inaugurated the Board of Peace at Davos, at the World Economic Forum, just a couple of weeks ago. And if you listen to last week's show, we put together a show about the great plan that we spoke about in October last year. But I just want to go through the charter of the Board of Peace. And so there's a few things that we're going to run through. But so the charter seeks to restore lawful governance. And I think just in terms of looking at lawful governance, in that over the last 2 years in particular, but for decades before that, the emptying out of all mechanisms of international law and the bodies that are tasked with determining those breaches of international law. I mean, fucking Bibi Netanyahu has been invited onto the Board of Peace despite being a wanted war criminal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that kind of falls flat. The international law here is mentioned, but it's cast aside in the same sentence in preference for the charter and the best practices capable of being applied from the nations of which the Board of Peace intervenes. And so it's a total self-referential positioning. And is it up to the Board of Peace to determine who has that capability?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. And so it's only open states by the chairman. So, and it's talking about intervention, the Board of Peace having intervention into nation states only with their consent. But it kind of just seems really fucked up to think that with Trump as chairman, that consent is even a consideration.
And the Board of Peace also has, you talk about it being like an emperor sort of gig, it has one of Donald Trump's son-in-laws, Jared Kushner, highly involved. And then it's got not a son-in-law, but the his co-parent-in-law, his other daughter, Tiffany, I think, is married to the son of Mohamed Boulos, and Mohamed Boulos is the envoy for the Middle East. And it's a whole lot of... His other son, of course, what's his name, Donald Barron Trump?
Barron, yeah.
Barron. I mean, he's proved useless. He said maybe send him over to the Geelong and him and Richard Marles could play in a mud pit together.
So the Security Council, the UN Security Council, has limited the Board of Peace activities to Gaza, even though the Board of Peace Charter makes no mention of Gaza and expands it to areas of conflict or, read, crisis. Yep. The authority of which for Gaza of the Board of Peace expires, according to the Security Council, in 2027. I really can't see a situation where the Board of Peace, seeing who's leading it, who's on the executive board, are going to roll over and give up the ghost, give up the reins.
Because there are two things here. First of all, there's the establishment of the Board of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the imprimatur of the United Nations for the Board of Peace to run a Gaza project, which is totally separate to the establishment and continued existence of the Board of Peace.
Of the Board of Peace, that's right. And so, you know, what actual power, I guess, in terms of even though its remit expires in 2027, according to the UN Security Council.
In Gaza.
In Gaza.
Yeah.
What actual power will the Security Council actually have without an intervention of a catastrophic scale and against the leverage of the world's largest military in the US? So the Executive Council of the Board of Peace is really, once Trump leaves office, is more than an untethered collection of Trump supporters and affiliates, and I'm going to get to who they are in a moment.
Yep.
But even after Trump leaves office or dies, because he's chairman for life, or until he gives it up, he's already chosen his successor and is already developing the incel-ridden private militia domestically that will no doubt follow his orders after the fact and after their federal government directives expire. Of course, I'm talking about here about ICE, about the collection of people who stormed Capitol, you know, all of these people who will just follow MAGA nuts, who will follow Trump anywhere. They're making up what could potentially be a private militia.
And one of the people who was behind and like orchestrated a big part of that storming the Capitol was a bloke by the name of Robert Gabriel Jr., whose name I believe you're about to read out.
I am. So once a Board of Peace sets up an account, it'll be a mechanism to go anywhere in the world with impunity. And as we said on a Friday rave that you may have heard last week, that this will become the blueprint for intervention into places of conflict, but also in times of crisis and disaster and of ever-increasing climate events. So, I mean, that's a pretty somber reading, and it is somber.
Yeah.
It's totally fucked. But I guess another thing that could be said that is, even though states have ratified things through the UN, like the Rome Statute, and the UNDRIP and et cetera, there's been a failure en masse to actually act on those requirements or to enshrine the mechanisms of those treaties and charters into domestic law, just like the Arms Trade Treaty or, you know, which Australia doesn't follow.
And the fact that we've got war criminals arriving in Melbourne this week and the Australian government's inviting them and they're not going to follow their responsibility of arresting the fucks.
Yeah, exactly. So make sure to get out on the streets this coming Monday the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could be said that this is all the same posturing and appearing to do the right thing but actually not doing anything at all. And I guess it's a little more transparent than that. But perhaps the member states could ratify the charter and continue to not do anything. And I guess that's why there is a financial incentive. Because after all, the board, which the chairman of the modus, with the chairman with the modus operandi generating the most wealth for the already wealthy under the guise of peace. But I guess, you know, Trump has been shit ass at keeping his own businesses in order, so who knows? But just talking about this kind of idea of private militias, we're almost actually rushing along. But Article 3.1b says that the Board of Peace shall vote on all proposals on its agenda, including with respect to annual budgets. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but one of the parts in here is the establishment of subsidiary entities. It then goes on in Article 3.2b to say that the chairman will have exclusive authority to create, modify, or dissolve subsidiary entities as necessary or appropriate to fill the Board of Peace's mission. So basically it said you can vote on the subsidiary entities, but Trump as chairman has the veto power over everything. Over everything.
For the rest of his life.
Yeah. And so who knows? You know, another part of the Board of Peace is the finances. So most listeners will be aware that the three-year term is free for member states, but to become a permanent member, all you need to do is fork out $1 billion. Now, it's not been confirmed where exactly the money will go.
I tell you, $1 billion, that makes the $40 for a 3CR subscription sound a lot more reasonable, doesn't it?
Oh, it makes it sound very reasonable. So, you know.
Sorry.
Gee, imagine how many subscriptions you could get for a bill. And so it's not confirmed exactly where the money will go, but I think it would be no surprises if we saw a Board of Peace venture capitalist firm start for their economic investment into the restructuring of the areas in which it intervenes.
Gaza. To start.
And so it'll be going to the US as a start. But this part of the charter is that it says that the executive board shall authorise the institution of controls and oversight mechanisms with respects to budget, financial accounts, disbursements, and as necessary or appropriate to ensure their integrity. So who's currently sitting on that board? And I want you to chime in here in a moment, but we've got, I'll list them off quickly. Secretary Marco Rubio.
Boo.
Steve Witkoff.
Boo.
Jared Kushner.
Boo.
Tony Blair.
Boo.
Mark Rowan.
Boo.
Ajay Banga.
Boo.
And Robert Gabriel.
Boo.
Now, what did you have to... Yeah, funnily enough, none of them have any integrity.
Yeah. They use the word of integrity a lot, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've done a good job of emptying out the meaning of any international law or the meaning of words. But what were you saying about Robert Gabriel just before?
Robert Gabriel was one of his advisors in the lead up to the 2016 election, and then when the insurrection on the Capitol, he was one of the people who was texting the staffers and all that, saying, POTUS is loving this, this is happening, that's happening. Vice President said he wouldn't follow through with Trump's fake statements about the election, and Gabriel instructed his speechwriters to include it anyway. But he's one of those shadowy behind-the-scenes guys who's orchestrating things.
Okay. Well, I guess in that, the advisors to the Board of Peace, there's one, Aria Lightstone, who was the senior advisor to the US ambassador for Israel between 2017 and 2021. and so his job was really, he was tasked with increasing bilateral US and Israeli relations. And so he's a special advisor to Board of Peace. We've also got Josh Grunbaum, who is, I believe, whether he's because of this appointment, was appointed as the Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service of the US General Service Administration, and who, at the time that Elon Musk was doing his Doge bit, was working side by side. I think that was in 2020. Oh, I can't remember when it was.
2021.
No, it was only last year.
2025, yeah.
Yeah, but he was working really closely with Doge as his role in Commissioner of Federal Acquisition Service of streamlining those acquisitions. Yep. And of course, we know that the companies that really benefit from that and are using it, and that you would have heard last week that are already on the ground, is these same companies. The AI tech companies.
Yeah.
And I guess so this is all before we get to the master plan, which I'm not going to speak for long on this because I think, you know, people can go back and have a listen, but it was unveiled by Jared Kushner at Davos a couple of weeks ago. And it looks still like the tech oligarch's wet dream and looks still very much like the great plan that was released in April 2025 that we spoke about last week. But I guess the point being, a big point here, is that the plan was in the pipeline prior to the so-called ceasefire, prior to the 20-point plan, and prior to the Board of Peace. And so it's been in the pipeline for a long time. And the similarities,
not something they come up with in a week.
Yeah, and the similarities are so stark.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, of course, we are the good folks at Slacker Radio of pounded down the door and they're coming in. But we just got to say, of course, make sure you get out on the streets this coming Monday for the National Day of Action against this Herzog. Government inviting Israeli President Isaac Herzog. So that is...
And not just him, his advisors. His advisors who have been escaping war crimes warrants all over the world, hiding in aeroplanes. They need to be taken out of that plane, and they need to face the full Australian law.
Yeah, that's right. So make sure 5:30 in the city. Let's shut it down and keep your ears peeled on 3CR for any more announcements about further actions during the week. But this has been us for a Friday rave. Stay tuned to Slacker Radio and don't forget to jump online to 3cr.org.au.
Subscribe.
We'll catch you next week.